You're listening to Tucson Tech Talk with your host, Aaron Moss, on Tucson Business Radio X.
Welcome to this edition of Tucson Tech Talk, everyone. I'm your host, Aaron Moss, broadcasting live in Tucson, Arizona, right here in the Tucson Business Radio X studio on Broadway. Tucson Tech Talk is a show where we answer the most difficult questions in layman's terms with different industries so that our computer experiences can be improved in our personal and business life. Today's topic is technology in the classroom. So technology in the classroom is we're hoping to have this show maybe reach listeners that are involved in education in Tucson and in the Arizona area. And the hope is that you may hear something from our panels today. We're going to introduce them in just a moment. And we hope that this will help our kids with technology for the long run, both even from as young as, you know, in the elementary to middle school to high school time frame in the course of their education. So I'd like to introduce our guests that we have here. First, on my left, representing Tucson Youth Development, their mission at the Tucson Youth Development is to equip Pima County youth to gain employment, achieve self-sufficiency, and reach career potential through education and training. They provide education and employability services for youth and young adults in Pima County. The gentleman that's going to be representing a little bit about him is he's the COO. Sorry about that. The COO at Tucson Youth Organization, which operates two charter high schools, ACE Charter High School on Stone Avenue and Youth Works Charter High School on 36th Street. They are an accredited charter high school through the Arizona Department of Education. Ladies and gentlemen, we would like to introduce James Keel to the program. Thank you, James, for being here.
Well, thank you for asking us here today. We do appreciate it.
Okay. And on my right here on the panel, we have another gentleman with a local charter school. And it is K-20, and their mission is to weave primary, secondary, and higher education into a K-20 model of autonomous education. He'll tell us more about that autonomous education that produces self-sufficiency and self-determination. Their vision is to ignite a movement that reclaims and advocates the education space to meet the needs of the community. And the K-20 will engage in three levels of education: primary, secondary, and higher education, in critically conscious model of education, to create the next generation of intercultural and dual language social innovators and solution seekers. This joint venture will push forward the idea that not only do they need to rethink schooling, but that the education sector as a whole can be reimaged to create social impact across the United States and potentially across the world. This will help unite an ecosystem of critical educators, community organizers, and Barrio scholars who are doing work for the greater good in our communities. So this gentleman on my right, he is a native son of the Rio Grande Valley of South Texas. He's the son of an immigrant mother who has and is a fifth generation Tejano father, a transplant to Tucson, Arizona and the Sonoran Desert. He has spent two decades in the Old Pueblo. He is the official spokesman for the K-20 Changemaker Campus, the CEO for the Institute for Transformative Education, and the lead consultant for ZenCons, Transformative Consulting. For the past 20 years, he has directed his energies to the support of development and transformation of people, places, and institutions. His expertise has led him to train individuals, groups, and organizations wanting to develop their innovative mindset and increase their reach and maximize their impact. And he lives with his wife, 15-year-old son, and 11-year-old twin sons in Tucson. Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to introduce Luis Perales to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. All right. So that's all my talk in here. So to kick off the show, based on the topic here that of technology in the classroom, the USnews.com website, it's a very believable report, but Arizona is ranked number 40 out of 50 states when it comes to educational rankings by state. So let me just put this out there. What do we think about that? Is that how do we feel about that, gentlemen?
Yeah, so I think when we look at these rankings, I think what's important to consider is kind of what they're actually talking about. So Newsweek is really looking at college readiness, things of that nature. If we're looking at per pupil expenditure, Arizona actually ranks lower. So how much the state actually allocates per student to be educated over the course of a school year and the course their trajectory through primary, secondary ed, we're actually closer to the bottom. We teeter between 49th and 50th when it comes to per pupil expenditure. So it's disheartening to see, and we're seeing the results of that, right? The lack of investment then leads to the Newsweek report ranking us at 40th. Out of 50 states, right? So I think it's an unfortunate reality that we feel, but I think those of us in education see that as our challenge, right? That is our call to duty, so to speak. We're running into that that building that's on fire instead of running in the opposite direction.
Right. So any comment, James?
Yes, he's very correct about that. Is the state, when they do these studies, it's college and career readiness. And we do fall far behind in that. So one of the things we're doing is even just to get the student to graduate from high school, we rank low on that. So it's our duty not only to make sure that the student graduates, but he graduates with ability to have a good career, to maybe even go to college. And so as a charter school, that's what we're looking at, is how do we get our students ready for college and career readiness. In fact, we do have two. At each school, we do have a college and career readiness counselor, so that we can start promoting. And that's where we're also, just to kind of mention, we are looking at that this year is try to get our students into dual enrollment. So when they do take classes, they can use it to go to college. And that's part of the things we're doing at our two schools.
Excellent.
I don't know if you're doing that, but we are.
Okay. All right. So there are efforts being made out there. Now, how can technology, if I can pose this question to you, James, what is the future of computer-based education in public education? What's the future hold for us?
Well, I think it's very good. Right now, I can only really speak of our school. It's hard to answer for somebody else's school. We are looking at going to a cloud-based education. I think that's a wave of the future.
Cloud-based.
Because of the cost. Number one is anytime you have a IT is very expensive. Servers, switches, internet, they're all very expensive. So we're going to a cloud-based education, and we're bringing in Chromebooks and everything for all of our students so they can use that technology during the class. So we use blended education where they can do education online in the class as well as direct education from the instructors.
So it's like a hybrid form. So there's some education that they're getting from the cloud, off the internet, off of some services running in the school. They can also take this Chromebook. And for people that don't know, a Chromebook is it's a type of laptop that only connects to the internet, can't really run programs, or you can't really load programs on it per se. They're getting a little bit better with it. Google is actually, it's actually a platform produced by Google, for those that don't know. And they're very cost effective, okay? They run cheaper than your average laptop. So you're going to be using these Chromebooks in the classroom, and they take it home. Do kids even get homework anymore?
Yes, they do. They're going to be able to do their work in class on the Chromebook. And you're right, you can't really access programs directly, mm-hmm. but we do have an education system that they can use from home mm-hmm. and from the classroom, where their homework, their assigned tests are online. Mm-hmm. So they do have access mm-hmm. in class as well.
Okay. Now, just to switch over just for a moment to Luis, you had mentioned that your IT, you guys are doing similar things or things as far as technology that your school is using currently, and maybe what future?
Yeah, most definitely. So our site here, our K-20 campus, was opened in 2012, and a partnership came together between three institutions. Michigan Academy, which has 25 years experience in Nogales, Arizona. Prescott College has 50 years of experience. And then Changemaker High School, which was the newer school that was started in 2012. We house all three entities coming together. Mm-hmm. And I think what we've really looked at when Changemaker High School first launched, it was looking at iPad technologies and MacBooks and really kind of going in that high-end direction. Mm-hmm. What we discovered very quickly is that technology is becoming outdated in a period of 2 years, sometimes mm-hmm. even sooner than that,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So these large investments in tech are no small feat for institutions of learning mm-hmm. from primary, secondary, or higher ed. And so it's really about keeping up with the understanding of what's the intent behind this technology. One of the things that we discovered very quickly was that we need to map towards where students are headed. Mm-hmm. So we looked at higher ed, and we said, mm-hmm. well, what are students being asked to do in that higher ed space mm-hmm. that we need to pull down all the way to kindergarten mm-hmm. So that youngsters who are coming in are already used to that process, and we're shifting mm-hmm. as the landscape shifts mm-hmm. in front of us, right? So initially, it was about being cutting edge. Mm-hmm. It was about having the best tech, mm-hmm. one-to-one computing environments, pretty much everything that everyone who's in the ed space talks about. Mm-hmm. What we very quickly turned to was, what are we mapping towards? And mm-hmm. what's the intent behind anything that we purchase or any training that we receive? And very quickly, it turned into, what are the priorities of the community? Mm. And mm. what is appropriate technology, mm. not just technology. So once upon a time, for example, in our community, corn was a high-end technology. From a blade of grass
yes.
to now mm. something that feeds the world.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's 7,000 years of a technology mm. evolving. So mm. the community has this experience with technology and understands that that evolution is going to happen. And mm. we use that frame to actually engage youngsters and then mm. to engage what our current reality is. Mm. Instead of constantly kind of saying, ooh, we need to get that latest fill in the blank.
Mm.
Or we need that that latest interactive board or whatever mm-hmm. it is for teachers,
yeah. mm-hmm.
right? Because it's shiny, because mm-hmm.
newer.
It's newer, it's cutting edge.
Yeah.
Oh, we can run plays just like the NFL, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It turns into more of a, what are the real needs and what's mm-hmm. the trajectory? And so mm-hmm. that's what we've really done. So for example, when we're looking at Prescott College, they have field stations in Kenya. Mm-hmm. They have field stations in Kino Bay. They have field stations on the Pacific Northwest. And so students from all across the country are then engaging with each other mm-hmm. and with their comrades overseas mm-hmm. in some instances.
Mm-hmm.
So we're saying we need to train our young people to mm-hmm. be able to engage that way. So mm-hmm. really, technology for us is about connectivity mm-hmm. rather than just understanding a new platform or, mm. or learning a new software.
Now you mentioned something very good, and I think it's a wonderful strategy, and that is since technology is always advancing at a very, very fast rate, that instead of trying to chase after the technology, bring the technology to the younger grades. So what that could mean is, now we're talking about more investment in the youngers, because as they grow into these, they can pick it up a lot more, and they can be better prepared when they hit those higher grades. So how are you preparing students prior to deploying? How are you preparing students prior to deploying new technologies? So I think you kind of answered.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is what I'm talking about with respect to going back to the community and the cultural underpinnings of how technologies, whatever they may be, have been integrated in the past. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times communities, particularly communities in like rural Arizona, where we're talking Nogales, right, who, I mean, we're going through a state right now where we're talking about the creative age. Right, but there's some communities that are still trying to get to the to the technology age, right? The information age. Mm-hmm. There's some communities that don't have high speed internet, right? I mean, around the world. Yep. I mean, not just, but not too far away from here, right? Mm-hmm. You have rural Arizona where youngsters don't have high speed internet, mm-hmm. right? The bandwidth isn't capable to have everybody in the school on a device,
or it's just not. It's just not financially advantageous for some of the communication companies to even send the line that way.
Yeah, so before we deploy, we have to look at those issues, right? Yeah. We have to have those real critical conversations about, well, what does this mean, right? Mm. And what is strategically our path forward? Mm. So we're looking at what communities have already done. They have been innovative already in their survival, in their thriving capacities. And so now it's, okay, we're going to introduce a technology. Is it appropriate? Is it the right time, right? And what has been the basis, the cultural basis for interacting with something that's new? Mm-hmm. Right. What does that look like? And so we look into the past to be able to move into the future.
It's not only rural Arizona, it's even here in Tucson. If you look at portions of our community, mm-hmm. there is no internet available at a cost. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the community we serve mm-hmm. may be lower income, where their parents, you know, they work 40, 50 hours a week. They may be making minimum wage. So a $50, $60 internet bill is beyond their reach. Mm-hmm. And also because we serve a particular community, they may not be able, they didn't grow up with computers. We're kind of assuming that everybody grew up with a computer since, you know, 1990s, and they haven't, because it could be from any walk of life, but computers weren't available in their school. They're still not available in their school. So it's hard to pass that education on to their children when they never had it. They don't understand what a computer does. Mm. They may have a cell phone, and they can run apps, mm-hmm. but they don't really know the capability of a computer, a desktop.
Right. So in the basic, that brings up an excellent point. The basic strategy is that you have to first know something before you can teach it. So it's even more critical for the teachers and educators and even parents to be on top of the technology that the children are learning as well. They don't have to learn it perhaps in depth that the children need to advance in the growing world that they're about to become part of, but it's important. So it's actually a dual education, both of the educators and of the kids.
Yeah, because if you look at his school, you know, they have the ability to take a young person who's in fifth or sixth and teach them computers. Whereas once they get into high school, if they're 14, 15 years old, they have never had, you know, what a computer is besides their cell phone. So we have to then backtrack and then teach them how to use a computer. So
I have this is just on a personal note. I have a friend of mine who's moving into a new apartment. We actually visited her, my wife and I, just last night, and she said she's getting Cox, which is cable internet based, mm-hmm. not DSL. DSL is slow. You know, you see the advertisements with DSL internet. What is their claim? How many megabits? Mm-hmm. 40. Okay. I only know of one person that actually has 40 megabits in all of my customers that have DSL. I only know. And the only reason why he has 40 is because the switch box is right at the end of his driveway. Okay. And it's this big, ugly thing. And that's like the switch box for that entire neighborhood. And he's the closest to it. That's the reason why he has that fast internet. So when they say it's not available in all places, it's available in very, very little places. Yeah. Internet companies like, CenturyLink, some of your student base may be in. So Cox only is does the city of Tucson for the most part. I believe they have a contract with the city of Tucson. And then outside of the city of Tucson, say Pima County or in the county neighborhoods and territories, that falls under Xfinity Comcast services for cable internet. Would it be helpful if maybe some arrangement could be made with some of these companies, like you said, to some of the families that can't afford these internets for the benefit of the kids? Because when they're taking these Chromebooks home that, mm-hmm. that they're getting issued, they can bring them home. They can do almost nothing with them because it's a net access device, and it needs internet to almost do anything.
In fact, we're looking at providing adult classes at our schools, mm-hmm. so we can then teach the parents how to mm-hmm. use a computer. Because if you look at Tucson, and you know, my wife is from Mexico, and mm-hmm. we actually are. I was just in Rocky Point this last weekend. Mm-hmm. There's not internet everywhere. Mm-hmm. And they don't have a Best Buy or Walmart where young mm-hmm. people or even adults can go in and buy a laptop for $300-$400. That's really hard. So with our immigration to United States, they don't bring that knowledge over. Mm-hmm. So we have to provide it mm-hmm. as educators, not only to the student, like I said, is to the adult as well. And mm-hmm. that will encourage young people to do that. Mm-hmm. And like with our organization, we're looking at getting our students prepare to work in an office mm. so that they can go in and, you know, they may be able to, play PlayStation, but can they do an Excel spreadsheet?
Exactly.
Can they do mm. PowerPoint? Can mm. they do anything on a computer that gets them a job? And we have some very good technology companies here. Intuit mm. is housed in Tucson. Mm. And can they go and get a job at Intuit? Mm. Raytheon. Mm-hmm. They need that background.
Those are big employers.
Very big employers. You know, our national, mm-hmm. our defense companies are here. Mm-hmm. How can you get a job if you can't run a computer?
Exactly.
And that's the hard part. Mm-hmm. And that's part of that college and career readiness. Yeah. So we have to, we're actually going to be working with Pima Community College for dual enrollment so the student can take a class at our school mm-hmm. and then apply it to college credit mm-hmm. in the future.
Right.
So. Yeah. The flip side to this is looking at the amazing things that young people are doing with technology, mm. right? Mm-hmm. We can look at it from a deficit, like people don't know how to use computers, they don't have access, but there's a lot of folks who do, mm-hmm. you know, and there's amazing. I mean, one of our students who was a certified drone operator, for example, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that was something that we were able to encourage and promote, and I mean, the student was interested in and took off. Our young people who are doing, I mean, we had students, you know, traveling and presenting in New York, presenting in San Francisco, right? They were having to submit proposals, having to, you know, we had a group of four young ladies who submitted a neighborhood reinvestment proposal with an instructor. And, you know, $219,000 was brought into a community to redo a park and put a pedestrian bridge. I mean, they're using technology, GPS technology. I mean, partnering with folks like the Tucson Audubon. Mm-hmm. Who comes in with GPS and maps out trees and does iBird surveys. I mean, there's so much that can be done that I think goes beyond just the basics of what computers can mm-hmm. do. I mean, when we really talk about technology, mm-hmm. I mean, one of our classes was looking at LIDAR data and LIDAR data to look at urban heat island impact. And so, you know, the Pima Association of Governments has planes that actually fly over Tucson that use LIDAR data to then map out where every single tree is in the city, right? Mm-hmm. And giving that data to young people, mm-hmm. Amazing. Our math class, when there was the mining spill up in New Mexico, right? The gold mine spill, was looking at contaminant rates and looking at data and processing that data. I mean, there's so much that can be done because our phones that we have in our pocket, the same technology that's in our pocket mm-hmm. was in the Apollo 1 mission,
yep.
right? I mean, it's like that's where we're mm-hmm. at now, right? Yep. Sending rockets up to the moon now, talking about Mars, mm-hmm. you know, and putting that in the hands of young people and saying, what can you do with this, right? Mm-hmm. The amazing things that come from that. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, there needs to be training. There needs to be some guidance in that. But a lot of it is kind of young people are used to this idea of Here's this new phone, figure it out. Mm-hmm. Here's this new gaming system, figure it out. And it's no different in the ed space when we say, we're going to use this with this ethic, right? With this purpose, like I was saying. We're going to connect. I mean, connecting with Prescott College, where we already offer dual credit courses, and students are taking classes with professors and taking class, and some of our instructors are professors for Prescott College. That in and of itself already changes this dynamic of saying, yeah, this is possible, right? Mm-hmm. We're not looking at the lowest common denominator. We're looking at what does social innovation look like and how is technology going to be looked at that? And then when that is then tailored to where high school students are presenting to middle school students and middle school students are presenting to elementary school students, we start to see that what was once upon a time seen as impossible seems very possible now.
Exactly.
Right? When I myself am building a studio like this studio in the school and asking students, engage in it. Mm-hmm. Right? Put up your podcast.
Absolutely.
Put out your material. Now the democratization of technology has allowed for so many more voices to be out in the forefront. And now it actually provides folks the opportunity to actually listen to young people. To actually hear them.
Right.
When before, it was kind of out of sight, out of mind. Mm. Now, they're controlling the culture.
Yeah.
They're pushing forward what is going to be done with the technology.
Right.
And I think I really push back hard on this, like, well, there's all of these deficiencies, right? Mm. Because what I've seen is when those folks are given the opportunity, and I think that's the big piece here. Yes, there's a digital divide. Yes, there's all these things. But I think the biggest piece that we go after is this idea of a gap in opportunity, right? Let's provide these things to young people.
Fill the gaps.
Fill that gap of opportunity.
Absolutely.
So that they can go out and do that internship in industry. So they can go out and use technology in these new ways.
You mentioned gaps in these things. So one of those big gaps, I'm sure we could all agree, because there's lots of parents listening. I don't think kids are really going to listen to this show, but it's a bunch of adults
talking. You'd be surprised.
But parents, what are some of the things that parents can do today? Because for a moment we did mention how there are some kids, some parents and families out there that may not be able to afford perhaps an internet connection at the house or any technology for them in the home. Okay. There might be a sibling that may have access to a Chromebook or some sort of cloud software, but they have to be at school in order to use it. So what are some things with that or others, things that parents can do today to help their kids with advancing technology with their education?
I think making it available to them is probably the biggest. Available to the parents, one way or another. If it means going to your local library or going to local school or using a relative's computer, is each school in Arizona, or especially in Tucson, has its own little niche. Like our niche is alternative youth education, whereas his youth may be a little bit more advanced. And which, you know, we're still getting to that point. So I think the biggest thing is making it available to them, okay? And once they have it available, then they will grab onto it and they'll learn more. Mm-hmm. Just like the student, some, you know, schools have the funds available to provide it to them because we're undergoing an IT restructuring this summer. Mm-hmm. And not every school has $250,000 to invest in their school. Mm-hmm. The bigger districts do, so they have the funding available. Mm-hmm. Whereas you look at the smaller districts, they may not have the funding available. So it's harder to keep up with technology.
Right.
But I think the biggest thing for any parent is do whatever you can to get a hold of a book, if it's a Chromebook or if it's a computer or if it's your phone. And utilize it, because a lot of people have phones, they don't realize how much they can do.
Because the computing capacity of those phones, we were talking about. Yeah.
Because if you have a Note 8 or a 7-8, I think you have Excel on it, you have PowerPoint.
Yep.
And a lot of people do not know how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if there's a class somewhere, take a class. Mm-hmm. And So look in your local libraries.
Local libraries, yep.
Pima County has a lot of programs. Mm-hmm. Pima Community College. Just do outreach and find it.
And also I want to mention YouTube is a great, although there's lots of, you know, pictures of, you know, kitty cat videos and, you know, funny animal video. It's actually, if you hone in the real power behind that video platform, there are many people that put information out there about how to do this, how to work Excel, how to work Word. Mm-hmm. Okay. Some people pick up on it like that. Some people need to be handheld through it. But if you're out there and you need to learn this technology, look at YouTube. I've personally learned many, many things off of watching YouTube, you know, because, you know, the people that put those, they may not be professionals or they may be amateurs, but they know more than me about a certain thing. So so my education gets pushed up. And then when I feel like I'm at that level, then I could watch something a little bit more advanced. And my education keeps getting pushed up and pushed up as my interest continues to flow with that.
Yeah, I changed my car brakes because of YouTube, and the car actually stopped. So I was happy about that.
I think we're all happy about that. Yeah.
But yeah, so mm-hmm. yeah, you're right. YouTube, just take a class. And that's the hardest part, mm-hmm. though, is a lot of people, they're hesitant in taking a class. There's because mm-hmm. they think it's very costly, but you know you can find a lot of free education around, and I think as like with our school in the community, we need to provide it to them, mm-hmm. and that makes the whole family, because once the parent learns it and the student, and if he's 15, 14, he can pass it to his 8-year-old sibling, his 5-year-old, because you know he's correct. My mm-hmm. children. I can't play PlayStation. I get killed in 30 seconds. They're way ahead of me. And yeah. they do. They communicate with each other from all across yeah. the world. They have friends that they will never meet.
And, of course, we're trying to close up that gap a little bit.
Always fascinating and always ahead of the game. The Computer Doctor is Aaron Moss on Tucson Business Radio X.
For those of us just tuning in, this is Tucson Tech Talk with your host, Aaron Moss. We're sitting here with James Keel and Luis Perales, both very knowledgeable of the education here in Tucson, broadcasting live from the Stuart Title Building in on Broadway here in Tucson. So if we can go on to this understanding of what would be some of the major differences between the needs, say, of like an elementary student versus someone in high school, college bound? What are some, because there might be some parents that have a wide array age-wise of kids. So what were the technology differences?
For us, I think the number one thing to understand is that education for a long time has really shut down creativity in young people and in people in general, right? Mm. And I think that's the number one thing, right? Really changing this mindset that for whatever reason, these new things are wrong, or that these new ways of doing things are going to change some, like nothing is sacred. In the ed space, in my opinion, like it should all be up to adjust to the realities of what's going on in society. And so when we're talking about working with little ones, it's about, you know, really presenting things in a creative manner and allowing them to be creative mm-hmm. with that technology, right? I mean, you can now go into a virtual reality space and put up an art studio. You can put up your art mm-hmm. and have people walk through your art studio.
Virtual reality.
Virtually.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people are saying, well, that's horrible because we actually need real art. I was like, well, who says that that's not real, mm-hmm. right? How are you? Well, that's not, same thing with, you know, the craze that, you know, every bookstore and every library was going to close down because now we have, you know, digital readers and you mm-hmm. can read books online or have audio books. Mm-hmm. Oh, that didn't happen, right? Mm-hmm. So there's these fears, I think, that we first need to get over. Mm-hmm. Right. Number one. And number two, that creativity space needs to be opened wider mm-hmm. for our youngsters. And with young people, I mean, if you ask a group of kindergartners and you say, who in here can sing? They'll all raise their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, okay, who can dance? And they all raise their hand. You say, who can draw? They all raise their hand. Mm-hmm. Right. You do the same thing by high school. Mm-hmm. Hands stop going up.
Mm-hmm.
So something happened, right? Mm-hmm. Something happened in that socialization space. It's no different with technology, right? Mm-hmm. When the difference is that people are being told what they should do with technology by when. So as a young person, as you know, when you're young and you have all this creative thought process, what they call theta, right? Where you're kind of almost hypnotized to learn all of the rules of society and everything, mm-hmm. right? You're operating at theta. You're in hypnosis. You're actually extremely creative. Mm-hmm. You know, a broom can become a pony. Right?
Right.
So we should actually have that at the forefront when we're engaging in this discussion of technology, right? Mm-hmm. This device right here can open up the world, right? Mm-hmm. And it goes beyond the fears of what adults have put forth, right? So now here's some practical things. That's the creative side. Some practical things that we've seen is also finding out where are our youngsters at? Where are they at with their academic capacity or ability? Where are their strengths, right? Right now, the ed space really looks at logical and analytical thinking. That's pretty much, if you got that down, then you're an A student and you're good, right? And research has shown very clearly, right? You know, multiple intelligences, Gardner's work, all these scholars that have written on and on, you know, about this. Like, that's not it. Like, there's all these different intelligences that exist. So really to use tech to find out, what is the passion of this young person?
Mm-hmm.
What is the capacity of this? And traditionally, this was done by people who read the stars. A baby was born in all these different traditions, right?
Sure.
We go back in time. Again, technology,
yeah.
right? People were looking at the stars. That was their technology. They were like, mm-hmm. okay, we're going to try to understand this. And they would make predictions. They would say, this child is amazing at this.
Mm.
And then the rest of the energies were put into that child to make that child amazing in that thing.
Right.
Because somebody who read the stars or tea leaves or whatever the case may be did that. Well, now we have technology that it can actually tell us.
Right. Well,
what are the strengths?
Absolutely. They use all kinds of formulas, and Google has Google can sometimes almost read your mind. But you know, you type in two letters, it says, "Aha, yep. you're thinking of this." You know, and that's exactly what
exactly
I was thinking.
Right.
But it's not that it's using any type of wizardry like you were suggesting. But that's how far technology is. It looks at what you've looked at in the past, what your interests are. Okay, you're this type of person. So if you type in SA, you must be thinking of this.
Yeah.
Okay, and it gives you that.
Yeah,
you know?
The coders of today are today's wizards, right? Really?
If you
think about it in that way, again, how we think of technology now, it isn't like looking at bile and looking at like the Greeks were looking at all these different things, these four elements of the earth that represented parts of the body. Like now we're like, okay, there's an algorithm.
Absolutely.
That can tell us who's in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
What is their strength? What's their capacity? And what do we feed?
Mm-hmm.
What do we nurture? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we're looking at little ones, it's a creative space. When we're looking at high school students, we're saying, where's your trajectory?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where are you going to move into?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times we'll have folks that will move into that higher ed space and go into areas of study that they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
That they graduate. I mean, I've been in the ed field 20 years now, and there's plenty of educators that say, man, you chose the wrong major. Like you should have chosen a different major, but you had a lot of units in this one, so you finished off with that degree, right? Versus really finding out, using technology to find out, this is your trajectory. You know, this young lady, this young gentleman, whoever they may be, can really like move this sector forward. And, you know, I had one student, for example, who came into us who would tell you everything about, you know, clock pieces, watches. Now he's connecting technology with forest management, right?
Forest management,
right? Who would have thought, right? He came in talking about timepieces and everything about timepieces, and now he's saying, I'm going to connect technology with how to care for forests.
How about that?
Whoa, right?
Yep.
And if we wouldn't have nurtured that piece
and
said, you know what, that's crazy, timepieces are like outdated, et cetera,
right.
We wouldn't have been able to have that.
So the nurturing part for the young ones, we want to nurture their scope of their imagination at a very young age, not being limited by the technology, but letting the technology be their access to what they want, what they can do in their future, and make sure that is kept alive all the way through to high school age, right? So if we can just go back for a moment, thank you very much for that answer.
Sure.
But Back to the parents and even those that are thinking of doing something with the technology, just to give them some good advice. So what would be your advice to other schools, perhaps in Arizona, that are thinking of updating their technology? You had mentioned that you have a $250,000 budget that you're working with. What have you found, James, that can be helpful?
I think also we have to look at, looking at his students compared to students that may attend our schools. Hmm. Our school's unique because a lot of our students have had, their parents never graduate from high school. Hmm. Our goal is a little different than his goals. His students are much more advanced. Hmm. Whereas all of our students have, to get them even to graduate, because a lot of them didn't make it at a big high school.
Okay.
Choya or Tucson High or Pueblo. So a lot of the students come to our school just to get through. So it's a different society, a section of students.
Right.
So I can only really answer, once again, is,
right, from
is a school, if, you have to take a look at what is your portion of your society. Are you trying to get them to do coding and change the world? Which we don't discourage. However, we have to get them so they can get a career, mm-hmm. like in cybersecurity or something.
Okay. So maybe just to modify the question. So what would you say would be the absolute minimum budget-wise that a family attending your school would at least need to do? In other words, should, if they have no computer, should they get one? If they have no internet, should they?
If their phone is a computer, because mm-hmm. not every phone is a computer, mm-hmm. they can do a lot, but then learn your phone, okay?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Learn, get a laptop, an expensive laptop, a desktop, and teach your student when they're young. Mm-hmm. get them to learn what a basic computer does.
Right.
And then start from there.
Education.
Because once again, depending on your school you go to, do they have the funding to start in first grade, second grade, what a computer is. Okay. When I grew up, I didn't know what a computer was. there wasn't that, I learned on a typewriter that was manual.
Right.
Yeah. So teach them also how to type. As simple as that.
Absolutely.
Because right now, we have a lot of students who can't even type. They hunt and peck. Teach your students to type. Teach your child to type.
Keyboarding. Absolutely.
Where everything's at. That's the basis of how to use a computer. And then progress from there.
Excellent.
So, because different schools have different, where the students are at on mm-hmm. the hierarchy.
Right. So parents really need to figure out where they are in get an honest look at where they are now, and then try to find some way to scale up. And it might be to some of the parents out there that may be listening, it may not be as difficult as you may think. Some people feel that the whole idea of even starting to use a computer, I don't know how to turn it. Oh, I don't know how to do this. But guess what? Your kids do. And when they are beyond what the parents and beyond what the teachers are, now you have to say, okay, we need to let's not we want them to advance, but we don't want them to, like a rubber band, to just be, we don't want to just let go of like a spring, and just let it go haywire. So we want the best for the kids, and we want the parents to reach out more so that they can help the kids with the technology in the classroom more. So other listeners to this program might also be perhaps other schools, other administrators such as you gentlemen, to their respective schools, even people in the county or others around the country. That what are some advancements or what are some other things that other schools can do to make the computer experience and future success of students better overall? But not just your schools, but overall.
I think schools need to be exemplars, right? It has to be that we're not asking our students to do anything that we're not willing to do ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. So,
good point.
I originally, again, coming from South Texas, it's one of the poorest zip codes in the country, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, didn't get access to a computer until senior year of high school and then into college. Mm. And I put it on myself to know, to learn, right? And to, so I'm doing it myself. I'm asking students to do podcasts. I'm doing podcasts. I'm asking mm-hmm. students to, hey, you can be an influencer online. I am an influencer online,
there you go.
Right? I'm asking students to, you know, put poster presentations together. I'm doing that, right? So we have to be the exemplar, because students will follow what we do, not what necessarily what we say, mm-hmm. right? So if they know that we're not willing to do it ourselves or we're afraid of that, mm-hmm. then they won't step into that arena. Mm-hmm. We have to be as uncomfortable as we want them to be, right? And I think same thing with parents. I mean, going back to this discussion, I'm like, what we're talking about is already happening. A parent will get a new smartphone because their outdated Nokia doesn't work anymore. Mm-hmm. And the first thing they do is they go to their teenage kid and they say, help me figure this out.
Yeah, program it.
Program it for me and teach me, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what my dad's doing.
And by the way, that's one of the main reasons why people get locked out of their phones, because they had their kids set it up mm-hmm. and they don't know the password.
The password and all that.
And so, sometimes, that was 2 years ago.
Yeah, I don't remember. Exactly. You know? So I think we, you know, educators need to be willing to step into that uncomfortable space and say, I don't know this, but I'm going to learn right next to you. We're going to mm-hmm. learn it together. We're going to learn this together. So, you know, I had lessons where I was teaching students of all the different socioeconomic backgrounds, right? I was teaching them, look, these are the different platforms, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, that you can use to your benefit rather than just for entertainment, right? Like, this is an attention-getting device, right? This tech, mm-hmm. okay? There's commerce going on in here. Billions of dollars, trillions of dollars that are being exchanged on a daily basis on these devices, right? So it's like, okay, let me show you how this works. Mm-hmm. Let me show you the behind the scenes of this, mm-hmm. and let me show you how I'm doing it, mm-hmm. right? I'm using these apps. I mean, I use the Adobe Creative Cloud, right? Mm-hmm. I use, you know, I put up Spark Pages as my presentation pages now. I don't do PowerPoint. Like, here's the link to the website, basically,
yeah.
right? And it's blowing people out of the water, like, whoa. And I'm saying, you should do this too. Mm. And I just did it here, so I'm going to show you how.
Right.
Right. Now it gives me worth as an educator. Because, mm-hmm. again, the big question becomes, what's the worth of an educator if I can just Google it?
Right.
Right? So we have to be willing to step into that space, become those folks who are engaging in this technological revolution, mm-hmm. so that we can then pass this information on to those youngsters and vice versa. You know, I've had some students say, hey, Shapiro, have you seen this app? You know, have you utilized this? You know, there's, you know, Top Hat. Have you used Top Hat? Do you know what Top Hat is? No. Have you used, right? And yeah. where there's this exchange happening that mm-hmm. never would have happened before, where it actually puts the educator and the student at an equal level.
Right.
Right. And I think educators should not be afraid of that. And I think too many of us mm-hmm. are.
Now, you were mentioning a lot of things. Now, you're very knowledgeable about a lot of these apps. You had mentioned Adobe Creative Suite, which is for those of you that don't know, there are apps that create other apps. There are programs that create pieces of art. There are programs that will help you to actually be as creative as you want to be, both adult and student. Now, some of these things require a significant budget. Others don't require such a significant budget. For example, we were mentioning, you know, switching from Adobe Creative Suite to, say, you know, Microsoft Office. You know, where you have your Word and your Excel. Okay, doesn't take much to actually get one of those programs even loaded onto even a Chromebook. Not the actual program, but you go into, say, like Google Docs. Yeah.
Sheets.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sheets or Write or whatever it's called. Now, there's even there's lots of alternative versions of it if cost is an issue for some families. There is OpenOffice, which is what's called an open source platform, where it's not you're not actually paying it, but you're actually buying a general license.
And essentially, it's the same format. Things are changed around a little bit because Microsoft owns certain titles and names to certain things. For example, it's going to ask you if you want to keep it rather than save it, you know, like little things like that. So so parents, even if you feel like you can't afford, look at some of the alternative options. Okay, you are the school of you know, of alternatives, because there's lots of alternatives. There's like the mainstay things that are out there, but then there's also a lot of these alternative softwares, alternative computers. I love dealing with people with alternative needs when it comes to computing. Feel free to send them our way, so that we can help them out. We even have payment programs to help out the kids. And even if they, you know, sometimes kids, we have these fundraisers, you know, for the kids. They have the candy bars. They have the baseball tickets that they, you know, that they sell. Mm-hmm. So some of those things could go towards technology, and technology does need a budget.
Yes, because if you look at it, I'm the homeless liaison between the district and the schools, mm-hmm. and it's difficult when you have a youth who, you know, I get a phone call. A young woman was walking to school in December, last December, when it was 30 degrees, and the high was 30. Mm-hmm. She didn't even have a jacket. Mm-hmm. Okay, so when you're trying to teach a student about computers, when they're walking to school and it's 38 degrees out and they have short sleeves on, and when I asked her, how come you don't have a jacket? Her father was deported. Her mom's disabled. She's not worried about a computer today.
Yeah.
She's worried about food. She's worried about clothing. Mm-hmm. So it's, you have to sometimes realize not, you know, what their students at. Mm-hmm. I have students who are couch surfers, mm-hmm. who they may be staying at a, you know, their uncle's house tonight. Tomorrow they may not. And it's, mm-hmm. it's difficult to, you know, let them know, you know, yes, you can code in the future. Mm-hmm. But with our students, some of them I have to teach the mm-hmm. basics, you
yes.
know, before I can, and I have to keep them warm, I have to keep them fed before I worry about, you know, 5 years down the line. So mm-hmm. that's a difficulty we face, mm-hmm. you know, so it's not always easy.
But sometimes if kids have the opportunity, they'll surprise you from time to time. And I forget the name of the musician's names. He said in a he's a very, very famous bassist, and he said that he could not remember any time in his youth where both of his parents were sober. And that's just to give you an example of how he grew up. But he became one of the world's greatest guitarists and bassists, and he produced. It's said that he was behind half of all the music released in the 70s, like the disco era. He was behind a lot of that music. So he, although he didn't have the greatest of beginnings or the ideal circumstances, he pushed through. So that tells us, you know, a lot about...
You're resilient. Like this young lady,
yes.
She was still walking to school.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so, but it's, you have to look sometimes at technology is... You have to push it, but sometimes it's harder for the student mm-hmm. who doesn't have anything to show them the light. There is, you know, with this, you can get a job with technology mm-hmm. and you may have a future. But right. sometimes it's hard for the student to realize that when they don't have anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just want to, sometimes it's a day-to-day thing for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, you have to take that student mm-hmm. and hold them by the hand and sometimes you have to drag them along into technology and show them there's a future. But these are some things, you know, each school depend what they're facing.
Yeah.
And that's what we face.
And this is some good advice for a lot of the parents in there that may be struggling financially. When I was a kid, okay, I grew up in a huge community in Co-op City in the Bronx, New York area. So in the basement of our 24-story building was the laundromat, and it was also a pile where people would throw out their large rubbish, piece of rubbish. And I would have to walk by there, and I would have to throw things out there, and I would have to do my laundry for the family. And every so often, I would have to walk by this in this hallway where people would – and sometimes there would be TVs and radios there. Okay. My mom had her reservations about me picking stuff out of the garbage. I would take it home, take it apart. And sometimes it would be fixing. Sometimes it would be like a little wire loose in there, and I'd get it running, and mm-hmm. I'd have a stereo, or I'd have a TV. Driving down the road now, since flat screen TVs are the latest, people are practically throwing out their CRT TVs. Those are the box shaped TVs and monitors. You can find those on the street.
Yes.
You can go online and find community places where they're just curb alert. You know, people are throwing this stuff out. Okay. How much does it really cost to just go over there and pick up some goodies? Go to some garage sales. Okay, sometimes they'll have little pieces of electronics or even things that can connect to the internet for very cheap. Not even the owner of the property even knows what it does half the time. Can't tell you how many times I've picked up very good routers, like $100 routers for like $5 at some of these sales, because they don't know what it does. Okay, they just said, oh, my son left this. I don't know what it is or what it does. Or, you know, here, you can have it for $5. I don't know what it is.
And which brings up a good point is, you know, if you're listening to this, you know, and you have technology that's lying around, see who needs it, you know. Find out. Donate it. You know, mm-hmm. there's a young person or there's an adult that could really use it mm-hmm. and because they can't afford it. Mm-hmm. And we don't do that because we're a throwaway society. Mm-hmm. And so that's
unfortunately.
So... if you're listening and you can do that, take it down and donate it to a school. There might be somebody that can use it, and we don't do that.
Yeah.
So, but if we bring this technology to everybody and show it the future, then our young people will be better because technology actually opens up the world. As we were mentioning, Luis was mentioning, you know, it opens up a world all around them. Because when I grew up, you know, we didn't know anything about, you know, somebody two towns over. Well, my son plays every day with somebody from Philadelphia. And what a wonderful thing. And I can listen to music, any music I want at any time. Whereas where I grew up, you had the AM radio station. So technology is great. It brings the world to you and you to the world. And if we promote that and we make it, then it will open up our students, our children's, everybody's lives to each other and know about each other. Maybe, you know, that's a great thing to me, yeah. You know, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, let me just commend the young Aaron Moss for doing what you did, mm-hmm. right? For that, that led to, you know, the Computer Doctor of Tucson.
Absolutely.
Right? Mm-hmm. This just initial kind of, again, creative inquiry that what we were talking about before, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, that's it. That's what we're looking at. It's really pushing back hard on this idea of, well, we can't. It's like there's the smallest thing could flick the switch for a young person is what we've seen. And it's about showing that that's a possibility. Mm-hmm. As distant as it may be, I imagine the young Aaron Moss was thinking about, you know, to be a computer doctor, I don't know. I'm just picking up this radio right now, right?
But that's exactly.
But years later, you're like, yeah, one thing led to another, led to another, led to another. So I think that is a perfect example of the opportunities that exist, right? There's all sorts of different things. I mean, we have to remember, even the poorest folks in the United States are rich compared to folks in other parts of the world mm-hmm. and have access to things that other folks in other parts of the world do not have. It's like we're blessed to have that opportunity. I consider myself blessed, right? Like I have family members mm-hmm. that had a very different, you know, life because of that lack of opportunity and connection. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, I'm going to push myself. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to access that. I'm going to learn that. I'm going to teach myself, like you're saying, YouTube. I'm going to YouTube that, right?
Absolutely.
And then being inspired by other folks. I mean, there's stories of, you know, three teenage young ladies in Africa who created a generator for their, you know, mm-hmm. their village and, you know, the orchestra.
Those are amazing stories.
Yeah, the orchestra that in Brazil, in the favelas in Brazil out of, you know, junk.
Yeah.
Right? That was created out of junk. Or, you know, the island that is made out of water bottles and somebody puts...
There was a young man in Africa... probably about 8 years old, he created his own caterpillar machine, excavator. It was a remote controlled model, but there he was just operating it with pieces of garbage.
Yep. junk.
That was in his village.
And that's what I'm talking about. Like, I think that needs to be the ethic that we embody, right? Because, yes, there's adversity. I will never say. I mean, I've experienced it myself firsthand. And over the 20 years of helping young people and families, I've seen it. But at the end, it's this idea of, like, that's still not an excuse. I'm sorry. There's still work that can be done. There's still opportunities that exist. Let's go after it. It may be hard. It may be uncomfortable. It may be uncharted territory for you. You may be the first person to ever fill in the blank in your family. Fill in the blank, whatever it may be. But it's like, we have to embody that, right? So a lot of it goes back to when we're talking about technologies. The oldest technology we have is storytelling. Telling stories, right? Communication. Yep. That's the essence. We're still doing it right now, right?
Yeah.
This is the modern version of something that was done thousands of years ago, right? Yep. And it's like, we need to tell these stories of these amazing things that are happening. Mm-hmm. And we need to then remember, there's another young Aaron Moss out there. And this Aaron Moss can now do something for that that next Aaron Moss. It's coming.
Absolutely.
Or 10 or 100 or whatever, right? Sure. Like you're saying, you're raising money for educational programming and things that you do aside from your business. I mean, I commend that.
Yeah.
To now the, you know, the computer doctor, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And it's like, I think we all have to embody that ethic when we're talking about technology and what the future may hold. So let's find those stories and let's put it together.
Okay. Well, we're gonna wrap up real quick. Quick plug for our guest today, James Keel. He can be found at TucsonYouth.org. Also on Twitter, twitter.com/Tucson_youth. He can also be found on Facebook, facebook.com/Tucson Youth Development. And our second guest, Luis Perales, he can be reached at k20tucson.org and also facebook.com/Mexicol Academy Tucson.
Mexicayo.
Mexicayo. Yeah. Thank you. That's spelled Mexicayotl. Academy Tucson. So we want to thank our guests for being here today. This has been Tucson Tech Talk, broadcasting live in Tucson, Arizona, from the Stewart Title Building. We wish you a good time. Until then, see you next time.